Stop the Presses. Your host, Mark Anderson, coming to you live today, the 6th of October on a Wednesday. And we are doing our usual video live stream of this show, simulcast to the following website, livestream.com/Ron Avery. Where have we heard that name? A-V-E-R-Y. /stop the presses, or you can just go livestream.com/Ron Avery, and you'll come to the site, then you click on an icon, a rectangular one to the right, that says Stop the Presses, and you'll get to the same destination. Anyway, Ron, great to have you with me, per usual. How's it going there in Seguin?
It's a beautiful day here in Seguin.
Slightly overcast here in Bridgman, Michigan, which 100 years ago, next year, it'll be the 100th anniversary of the great communist bust. You heard me correct. A bust of noted communists who met in a camp that used to be in the sand dunes near Lake Michigan here. And William Z. Foster's literature was in there. A bunch of early leaders, Leninist-type communists, were busted and rounded up by the FBI. And the sheriff at that time, if memory serves, was George Bridgman, and the town was named after him, the town where I went to high school here. Just a quick historical footnote. You can look it up, the great Michigan communist bust of 1922. It's online. Oh, about 1990, when I was working for the South Bend Tribune, I found most of what was confiscated from these so-called commies, and it was in the archives of Western Michigan University in Kalamazoo, where I suspect the materials still are, including books signed by William Z. Foster, who was an associate, at least distantly, of Vladimir Lenin. I don't remember all the connections, just a quick footnote. Anyway, something even worse than that, in a lot of respects, is the banksters and their minions. And yesterday, I took the trouble, and it was somewhat troublesome, to sit through a 1.5-hour program of one of the building blocks of Bilderberg, and that's the Brookings Institution. Since the Bilderberg Group is no longer meeting regularly, allegedly due to COVID, they didn't meet this year and they didn't meet last year, a surprise to many of us Bilderberg hounds, which I inherited from Jim Tucker of AFP, what I've done is to look at groups that were represented at Bilderberg, especially in recent years, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Brookings Institution. They kind of make up the assembly of Bilderberg. If you look at Bilderberg as kind of a international assembly or almost like a quasi-legislature of bankers and royalty and big corporate types and big media moguls and finance ministers and whatnot, high-techy people have gotten in there in recent years. If you look at Bilderberg as sort of an assembly of quasi-legislative, quasi-planning commission, world planning grouping, networking, lots of networking, then you simply take it apart. Rather than looking at it as a whole, you take it apart and you look at, well, who's represented there? Well, the Brookings Institution is a major one in recent years. So yesterday's program that I sat through, I'm getting there, was the way that the U.S. should handle the debt ceiling and whether the debt ceiling should be suspended or raised, and what the consequences might be. And we're going to play a video clip of an introduction statement of that. We might as well do it now because it explains it a little better than I can. And Ron is preparing something for the visual part of this show. Of course, the audio is there for audio-only listeners at republicbroadcasting.org. But this is a Brookings Institution representative who's going to speak here in a moment as we gear it up about what the purpose of this program yesterday was. And I'll just preface what she says by saying they're being very candid here in a lot of respects. Those of us familiar with monetary matters, including myself, we're privy to this, so we know what's being said, we know what's meant, but even those that aren't privy to it, I think, can glean from this a lot of candor. Now, we can welcome the candor, of course. We like clarity. But what is said, if you know what to listen for just a little, is rather unpleasant and what the implications are. And we'll cover that in at least the first half of today's show. maybe a little more. We've got some other materials to possibly share, depending on time and callers, about COVID and whatnot. Let's go with this Brookings introductory gal, Ron, about the first 6 minutes. If you can start it at about 25 seconds into it, that would help. But whether you do or not, the first 6 minutes and 12 seconds. So go right ahead.
That'll be a little tricky. We're going to start it at 3 seconds.
That's fine. I can talk a little until she starts.
Okay.
And here we go with the video clip for the...
My name is Louise Shaner, and I'm the Policy Director of the Hutchins Center on Fiscal and Monetary Policy here at Brookings. I'd like to welcome you to our event, The Debt Limit, What If? Our focus today is on how financial markets, the Fed, and the Treasury are likely to respond should Congress fail to act in time to prevent the debt limit from binding. We'll leave to others the all-important question of how likely Congress is to act before the Treasury runs short on cash, and how to make sense of the partisan political maneuvering underway on Capitol Hill. Before we get to our panels, I'd like to talk first about some of the basics. First of all, what is the debt limit? The debt limit is the legal limit on the total amount of federal debt held by the public. Once the debt hits that limit, the Treasury can no longer increase its borrowing. It can, of course, roll over existing debt, as that doesn't increase the total amount of debt outstanding, but it can't issue net new debt. The U.S. government hit that limit, $28.4 trillion, on August 1st. However, Treasury has been undertaking a set of what are known as extraordinary measures, basically ways of preserving cash by delaying making certain government investments so that the government can still pay all of its external obligations. But these measures won't be sufficient much longer. The Treasury recently estimated that by October 18th, without an increase or suspension of the debt limit, Treasury won't be able to pay all of its bills. So what then? Well, that's obviously a very important question, and the true answer is we don't know for sure. It depends on how the situation is managed, how long it lasts, and the extent to which investors alter their views about the safety and liquidities of U.S. Treasuries. How will Treasury deal with the binding debt limit? Another thing we don't know for sure. The Congress has never allowed the situation to get that far. But in 2011, when the debt limit was only lifted at the 11th hour, we know from FOMC transcripts released years after the fact that Treasury did have a contingency plan in place. Under that plan, Treasury would continue to pay principal and interest on its securities. That is, it wouldn't default on its debt. Instead, it would cut all other spending. This time, the cut required would probably be 40% or even more. But according to the plan, the spending cuts would be accomplished by delaying payments rather than by giving them a 40% haircut. That is, they wouldn't send out Social Security checks with a 40% cut. They would just delay the checks until they had enough cash to pay them in full. So at the beginning, that might mean up to a few days delay in Social Security benefits and payments to Medicare providers, payments to contractors and federal employees, et cetera. But over time, those delays would mount. So the big questions are, of course, what are the costs of allowing the debt limit to bind? Is this a disaster for the economy, or is it just a minor setback? And what does that depend on? Last week, my colleague Wendy Edelberg of the Hamilton Project here at Brookings and I put out a joint piece discussing this issue. We argued that while assuredly a negative for the economy, the speed and depth of the economic costs would depend on whether investors were confident on time and on how long investors thought the impasse would last. In the first few days of a binding debt limit, investors believed that the Treasury would continue making all interest payments in a timely manner, and if they thought the impasse would be short-lived, it's possible that the initial reaction would be muted. If instead there was a lot of uncertainty about the security of Treasuries, perhaps Treasury wouldn't announce that it was paying principal or interest, or perhaps there would be legal or political challenges that suggested Treasury couldn't continue to prioritize bondholders over other people to whom the government owed money. The reaction could be much swifter, with stock markets tumbling, Treasury markets in a disarray, and panic all around. Similarly, if investors believed that the impasse was likely to last a long time, then even if it was assured that Treasuries were safe, markets could become worried that the large cuts to federal spending, even though they would eventually be made up once the debt limit was no longer binding, could derail the recovery and throw the economy back into recession. And then once again, there could be a swift and significant market reaction, even in the early days. Today, the market seems to be just a little worried. Yields are up on Treasury securities maturing near the expected so-called X date, the date the debt limit binds, but only by 5 to 7 basis points. But it's still early, and there's a huge amount of uncertainty about how financial market reactions will evolve as we get closer, and particularly if we cross that date. That brings us to today's events, where we will discuss the issue of the debt limit from the perspective of financial markets, the Treasury, and the Fed. First, we have a panel of experts discuss the issue of the debt ceiling from Wall Street's perspective. Next, we discuss how Treasury and the Fed might manage the situation. Both panels will be moderated jointly by my colleague David Wessel, director of the Hutchins.
Okay, is that all you wanted to hear?
Yes. Yeah, now there's a bit to unpack there. That's Louise Shiner of the Brookings Institution. As I mentioned, a member of the Bilderberg Assembly, you might say. And what's embedded or woven into what she said there, and this is fleshed out in the program that I listened to that she's introducing, is that, first of all, there's this clearer than ever admission, in my opinion, that the federal government is completely at the mercy of the debt-based usurious system, and that it cannot get any money without having the right credit rating. Now, there's a certain amount, of course, that's taken in taxes. But if the federal government had to take in taxes the amount that it spends every year, there would be, even among sometimes brain-dead Americans, there would be a rebellion. So they borrow a portion, a significant portion of what is spent every year in the federal budget. Some of it's from tax revenue of all sources, including income tax, and much of it is from borrowing. But since the borrowing part is a large component, then you see this tremendous dependency and the way that the government is kept in this debt cage by the financial system, the center of which is occupied by the central bankers of the world. Now, it's interesting to note that when I wrote some Q&A into the program yesterday, I listened to it in real time, not archived. There was a way to ask questions or submit comments, and I submitted 2 or 3 times. At a bare minimum, I asked the Brookings people, why are we even going down this road? Because the U.S. government, by whatever quality and quantity it would want to do this, that would be some separate decisions, whether there'd be a metal backing or not. But the bottom line is that the U.S. government doesn't have to borrow at all. It can create, as the former Congressman Wright Patman of Texas talked about, and Jerry Voorhees, another former congressman that understood the debt system, he wrote a book called Out of Debt, Out of Danger. They understood, among others, that you simply don't need a debt-based system at all. The federal government shouldn't have to borrow money. There shouldn't even be a question of whether they should borrow or can borrow or whether there should be a debt ceiling to raise or suspend. The government has the prerogative to produce United States notes of whatever nature and issue those into the economy, spend them into the economy, not borrow them into the economy, interest-free. And these questions and comments along those lines that I submitted to Brookings were completely ignored. Now, maybe they got a deluge of questions and comments and didn't get to mine. I can't say for sure. But just about every other thing under the sun was discussed in terms of this matter. And one of the things, Ron, and those listening live and on the archive, one of the things that came through in this show was they are actually contemplating, although they don't come right out and cheerlead about it, they don't get like pumped up about it, but they're contemplating scenarios where bondholders, including those that hold the U.S. debt, would be given priority, and these Social Security payments to the populace and Medicare payments to the populace, socialist programs though they may be, it would be in the short run financial panic of a very significant nature if finally we hit a wall here where Social Security payments were late in coming or were cut or both. Same with Medicare payments, and then greater shares of medical expenses are paid by the population. But what it came down to, Ron, after I listened to the program, was a little bit of a bias leaning toward paying the super rich and the bondholders, which includes China. They hold a lot of our debt. But paying bondholders before we would use the money to help the retired population of America, for example, or those on disability. And whatever qualms we may have about these socialistic systems, certainly the American people should come first in terms of being the beneficiaries of the spending. So the elite are being a little more open than ever before, Ron, about putting themselves first, being on the receiving end of these huge interest and principal payments that the U.S. pays every year, the Treasury pays every year toward the national debt. And they want their supper first. They don't want to wait in line. And this is what I got out of it. Your thoughts, Ron, that you might have.
Well, I did have a little trouble understanding her, unfortunately, but it'll sound good on the recordings of it. But and trust me, they didn't ignore. They ignored your question. They saw them. But they're not. It's just like all this COVID stuff. When they say ask the public, send us your questions. And when you send them real questions about whether or not the thing has really been isolated or not, you never hear back from them. That's not the question they want to. They only answer questions that are in the train they're on. They're not going to attempt to answer any questions that challenges the whole debt system.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And this is interesting, too. I looked up something online because they used a term called technical default. And they actually floated this concept of the technical default. Well, what a technical default evidently is the government keeps paying bondholders but halts payments to others, which is exactly what I'm saying. The government keeps paying bondholders their interest payments but halts the payments to others. And of course, we're trapped in a debt-based system. Now, it's interesting to remember back in the days that Mariner Eccles, who was a Mormon, this is rare, most Fed chairmen have been Jewish, quite honestly, the Mormon Fed chairman, Mariner Eccles, in the 1930s, was addressing, if memory serves, Congressman Wright Patman of Texas. He was from northern Texas, a great congressman, back in the days when we had great congressmen. And in fact, the Financial Services Committee, the House Banking Committee, as it used to be known as the Banking and Currency Committee. It had a more revealing name. But that room in Congress, I've been in there many times, is named the Wright Patman Room. It's in the Rayburn Building, the House Rayburn Office Building. And covering Congress, I've been there many times, Wright Patman's pictures on the wall. And Mariner Eccles was talking to Wright Patman, who was a member of the House Banking and Currency Committee, probably in the 1930s. And Mariner Eccles told Wright Patman that under the current system, which was soon becoming what it is now, even back then, that without going into debt, without deficit spending, without all the borrowing, there would be no money at all. So in a debt-based system, the government has to go into debt to even have money. So ironically and amazingly, there almost has to be deficit spending in order for there to be enough water for the water system to run, so to speak. But we're coming up to the first break, and we'll reflect on this more. Stay tuned.
How they drown in incomplete capacity. Strangers thought them all when the fear it calls. How we drown in stylistic audacity. Charge the common ground.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here's a testimonial from Amazon.com. I am only 40, but I have put my body through hell working in manufacturing for 20 years. I recently started to notice a buzzing feeling along with a stuttering sensation with my heart. I had a full cardio stress done, which I passed. I decided to try Extendivite after getting the jingle stuck in my head. Halfway through the bottle, I really did notice a difference. After getting home from work, I would just sit in a chair for a few hours feeling like crap, and this stuff reduced that feeling along with heart discomfort to almost nothing. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Yeah, from the little big horn to the Rio Grande, it seems we've seen the last lemonade stand. Well, all the flea markets and the paper routes, if you can't trade in bulk, you get muscled out. Hey, can we just slow down to the break of day? Yeah, would you hold me close to the break of day?
And returning to the next segment here, returning to Stop the Presses, that is, the next segment here on the 6th of October, 2021. For those who may be just tuning in, I'm discussing a Brookings Institution program based in Washington, D.C. yesterday, where they talked about the debt limit, that the U.S. has reached the debt limit, and by October 18th, something has to give, where Congress would either raise the debt limit, suspend it, which kind of means act like it isn't there, or default. And in defaulting, a couple of the Brookings Institute participants in their panel insinuated that the bondholders must get their principal and interest payments regardless of whether American Social Security recipients and Medicare recipients get theirs. They weren't medieval about it, but the implication was clear that bondholders, when push comes to shove, come first. There was a little bit of trepidation in what they were talking about with regards to that. One of the panelists was kind of like, are we sure we should say it that way or think this way? But that was what was going on. And they're just basically asking how Congress is to act. What are they supposed to do before the Treasury runs out of cash? Again, it's just a travesty, as I was saying before the break, that we have to be in a situation like this to begin with, where a sovereign government could run out of cash and be totally dependent on a system of borrowing and usury to get any cash. And United States notes could be issued very easily. You know, Ron, when the Tennessee Valley Authority was built, the New York Times did an article quoting Henry Ford and Thomas Edison. And Harvey Firestone was a friend of theirs as well, part of the populist movement back then. It also included Father Charles Coughlin, the radio priest, and Huey Long, the former Louisiana senator who ran for president until he was assassinated. They all knew each other, not all of them intimately, but they knew of each other. And what Edison and Ford told the New York Times was, why should the United States print bonds and sell the bonds to the Fed and the financial markets and who would become bondholders in order to get money in return for those bonds, but then pay interest to the bondholders? Why should the U.S. print bonds when they can simply print money and create the money interest-free? And again, whether gold and silver are involved is another question. That's sort of a qualitative question we can leave aside for now. But the point is to be free of this hornet's nest, this free of this octopus that has its tentacles around the money system and therefore has its tentacles around our communications and media systems and medical systems and why we're in the COVID bind we're in now. So the Brookings program provided a snapshot of this bind that the U.S. has been in at least since 1913 when the Federal Reserve Act was passed. So it's very instructive to hear these Bilderberg-related or Bilderberg-connected organizations, Ron, sort of spill the beans. These think tanks are like the kitchens of the New World Order, where recipes are made and things are stirred and tasted and refrigerated or put in the cupboard until they're needed to help make policy. So it's very helpful for the alt media to cover these things, such as ourselves. Any thoughts before we get to the next break, Ron? Or
yeah, just a real quick one. I think one of the key words you said was, why should a sovereign nation have to do this? The catch is we're no longer sovereign. The nation has actually been overthrown by those very financial interests. They are literally the controllers of it. The people do not control this country. Those very financiers are the ones that run it, lock, stock, and barrel.
Right, right. Well put, concisely put, and we would not have the COVIDocracy we have, the bureaucracy consisting of all the COVID rules and regulations and lockdowns and vaccine regimes. None of that could hold any water or have any momentum or strength without this financial coterie first establishing its hegemony over the West, particularly the United States and Canada and others. But yeah, there it is, the big monster. We're looking right at it, right in the face. And the Brookings people make it all sound so routine and relatively, kind of neutral and almost harmless.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yes, yeah. And so they talk about it in investor terms and, you know, what should investors do? Well, you know, for the U.S. to get money to spend as a government, need not have investors. Once the money is spent into the economy interest-free, then people can invest from there. But to invest in the government, to have the government indebted and issue T-bills to help support the government to keep the lights on is ridiculous. And like you say, something with which we've been overthrown. We'll be right back with more. Stay tuned.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from simplycleanfoods.net, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters. Right now, Amazon Prime members will receive fast 2-day shipping. Go to simplycleanfoods.net. That's simplycleanfoods.net. But do it today.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Kosher-tified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Kosher-tified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
And welcome to the second half of Stop the Presses here on the 6th of October, 2021. Your host, Mark Anderson, coming to you live today. And I'm joined by Ron Avery. As usual, we live stream the video simulcast to livestream.com/Ron Avery, A-V-E-R-Y, /Stop the Presses. And as I switch from the national debt subject of the Brookings Institution from a program I covered yesterday, and I'll mention that there'll be an in-depth article coming up in American Free Press on that program by yours truly, I'll just offer a couple parting remarks that came from that meeting, and then we're going to look at a little bit of COVID stuff and some open discussion, maybe take a couple calls toward the end. A Mr. Barry, B-A-R-R-Y, mentioned that T-bills long-term yields went down with a Standard & Poor's downgrade recently, Standard & Poor's being a credit rating agency like Moody's. But with the inflationary economy lately, and inflation edging back up, we've been through enough of these episodes in past years. And this guy, he thinks that despite the S&P downgrade recently of the U.S. credit rating, that investors will not get skittish because they know Congress will eventually find a way, along with Treasury, to keep borrowing even more money and getting even more in debt. And then a Brian Sack, spelled just like it sounds, S-A-C-K, he used to be head of the New York Fed. He was high up in the New York Fed. And for those who are familiar with the private privately owned and controlled Federal Reserve Central Bank of the United States. Of the 12 branches of the Federal Reserve, the New York Fed is the most instrumental and the most powerful. He said, Brian Sachs said, there's a considerable amount of uncertainty as to what would happen if we have another downgrade of the U.S. credit rating, and therefore yields would be affected, the yields of the T-bills, bondholders' income would be affected. So this is some of the background. And then some of my notes also say, if the United States defaults on its debt, which is unlikely, but we have to look at all scenarios, it would be more expensive for the Treasury to borrow money and could result in this credit rating downgrade once again. We've had some already. The U.S. is no longer AAA. And though markets might breathe a sigh of relief over averting a government shutdown, analysts noted that there's no clear path to dealing with the debt ceiling. So there was some disagreement or variation on what to do about this, but that kind of sews that up for today. Again, I'll be writing much more in depth and much more completely and coherently about it, you might say, in the upcoming American Free Press that will come out a week from today. It'll go to the printer a week from tomorrow, technically. It'll go to the printer. And I'll announce more of that, and I'll talk more about this subject when the article is fully written and I have more notes and quotes to rely on. But this was a preview of coming attractions today, Ron, of what Brookings is talking about. And it's also interesting to note, before we show a little COVID stuff, that there's a trend. I've noticed it over the last 5 to 10 years. A lot of people have often thought of, you know, the great capitalists in the United States, capitalists being conservatives. And maybe to some extent, economically speaking, that's true. But what has happened is most of the think tanks and banksters and credit rating spokesmen, people that are involved in this overall financial industry as it's become, have taken on highly liberal social policies. It's all about gender inclusiveness. It's all about supporting the transsexual movement. It's all about supporting the gay blade movement. It's all about all sorts of woke and politically correct and ultra-liberal social views, pro-abortion across the board, by people that are involved and call themselves, you know, big-time capitalists. And it used to be in America, yesteryear America, where your businessmen, your capitalists were at least, for the most part, conservative, even church-going people. So now the new modern capitalists, Ron, the neo-capitalists, are ultra-left-wing in their social views, almost off the page. So it's a very volatile combination to have this debt-based system, and then morally, on the moral side of the ledger, to really have no real regulation there either. Anything goes. So this is particularly corrosive. And this doesn't often get discussed, and I wonder what your view might be of that, Ron.
Well, yeah, that doesn't get said very much, but I noticed that even the football games. Now, I like football, and they had an ad on the other day that said, football is for everybody. Football is for queers and lesbians, homosexuals, and, you know, it went through naming all these things, and then it had the NFL logo with the rainbow through it. I mean, be honest with you, that's just damned irritating. And what it is the promotion of all of these, and I still maintain these things are ungodly. These things are sinful. These things, God has destroyed cities over and probably nations. And here we are promoting this stuff. It means that these people are totally no compass. They're immoral.
Yeah. And it's a volatile combination. It's definitely the fuse and the match in terms of bringing down society on the financial level and then bringing it down on the social moral level where there's no real reinforcements left. And so it touches the spiritual as well as the temporal parts of life when you look at all those subjects.
I'd like to make one of the
Go right ahead, Ron.
And I think one of the reasons they promote this kind of stuff is because the people don't know what sex they are, and or they don't know anything of these basic morals, they absolutely don't know what lawful government is. And that's really where they want the population to be, so ignorant of what lawful government consists of that they can go to any level of tyranny they want to without repercussion. I think that's really the whole thing.
Including the financial tyranny that Brookings was alluding to without calling it tyranny, but describing the mechanisms and infrastructure of it and talking about, again, to a large extent, maybe not completely, that bondholders and people high up in the financial world come first, the American people come last. And with that being said, Ron, I sent another link to you of a website, 30 Facts. It starts with the words 30 Facts. And this is a website I referred to recently on this show that is sort of a one-stop shop, ladies and gentlemen, on all things COVID. And it's helpful. We're going to try and get that on the screen. Here it is. Let's go a little bit down for now. We're going to look at some graphics first, if we could, Ron. Scroll down. Okay, right there. This is an important graphic. I don't know if you can make it larger. It probably doesn't matter. But this shows the age standardized mortality rate, the ASMR. And it's the age standardized death rate per 100,000 population. And let's try and clear that. There we go. That's plenty big. Yes, let's leave it there. No bigger than that.
Okay.
And as you see, since 1943, this graphic goes from 1943 all the way up to the present. This age standardized death rate per 100,000 population used to be much higher in the 1940s, 1950s. As we get through the 60s and 70s, through the pink vertical bars that you see here, you'll see that rate goes down. Now, you go to the far right of it, and 2020 is all the way to the right. I'm assuming that's visible, Ron, for viewers on the live stream video part of this. You get to 2020, and it's roughly, we should be good. Okay, there we go. Thank you. 2020 is not the lowest it's been since about 2009, 2008. But it is among the lowest. Even 1985 was significantly higher. 1,500 per 100,000 population, if I'm reading that right. And 1943 was about 2,300. 1950 or so was about 2,500. The age standardized death rate per 100,000 population. So while I don't have all the data inputs about this, this shows that 2020 is by no means significantly high and is among the lowest, not the lowest, but among the lowest since 1943. Now, if you go down lower, Ron, if you go down further on that same page, there should be another graphic. And so As we're looking at this, ladies and gentlemen, it bears comment that if COVID were killing such large amounts of people, why isn't the 2020 age standardized death rate per 100,000 a lot higher, including, in fact, shouldn't it be a record high compared to 1943 and all the ensuing years between then and now? And it is not. Now, This page that I'm getting this from, this one-stop shop about COVID, I'm going to make sure I post it on today's archive listing at republicbroadcasting.org for today's Stop the Presses show. And I might have done that, I believe, in a recent archive. I'm going to post it again. And, in fact, I want to put it on the main slideshow for RBN's website for their news feed. And I'm going to ask the board op to be prepared for me to send that after today's show so they can actually put this article on the news feed itself. So I'm going to make sure that listeners live and on the archive and viewers of the video at livestream.com/Ron Avery/Stop the Presses can read this whole one-stop shop article where you've got all the arguments you need and all the data you need to fight the COVID fight, as it were. Let's go. Okay, let's X that out, Ron.
Okay.
Okay. Now, let's go up just a little bit. Whoop. It's a little tricky.
Did you want to get to the video?
We can do that. Yeah, there's another graphic, but let's put that graphic aside. You're at the video. Okay, there's the graphic. I wanted to just look at this graphic very quickly.
This is
age down a little bit. The other way. No, the other way.
Oh, go up.
Yeah, right there. Oh, no. That one, right? We're looking at another graphic for the audio-only listeners. Up a little higher. I'm only seeing part of it. No, right there. Don't move. The age-adjusted death rates per 1,000, excuse me. Age-adjusted death rates per 1,000, United States of America, 1900, get that, till 2020. And look at how the vertical bars, with minor exceptions, work their way down. And the far right is 2020, the vertical green bar. The rest of them are kind of a lilac light purple color, kind of a lavender. You'll notice how low this version of the age-adjusted death rate is. So 2020, far from setting any highs, far from setting any records at all, is about the same as 2004. And that is among the lowest on the overall graphic ever since 1900. So if COVID is the bona fide cause of such high numbers of deaths, then how can this be, is my question.
Well, apparently all these people quit dying from everything else. I mean, you know, everybody's dying from COVID and nothing else, you know. So, I mean,
yeah, there's no more car accidents. There's no more cancer. There's no more heart disease. There's no more anything. Evidently, we're immortal unless you get COVID, Ron.
Yeah, that's what it's looking like.
That's at first blush. That's going to be my take on it. Now, let's go to a video of a British official speaking alongside Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, in May of 2020, and listen what he has to say. This is a little over 2 minutes long. Audio only listeners, of course, will hear the audio, and for the video feed, we'll see the image as well. And let's go with that, Ron. I don't know the name of this British official offhand, but he's with Boris Johnson, the PM, and someone else as well. This is May of 2020. Keeping that in mind, a Downing Street coronavirus briefing.
Are you through talking?
Yes, go ahead.
Equally, the fact that actually the great majority of people will not die from this, and I'll just repeat something I said right at the beginning, because I think it's worth reinforcing. Most people, a significant proportion of people will not get this virus at all, at any point in the epidemic, which is going to go on for a long period of time. Of those who do, some of them will get the virus without even knowing it. They will have the virus with no symptoms at all, asymptomatic carriage, and we know that happens. Of those who get symptoms, the great majority, probably 80%, will have a mild or moderate disease, might be bad enough for them to have to go to bed for a few days, not bad enough for them to have to go to the doctor. An unfortunate minority will have to go as far as hospital, but the majority of those will just need oxygen and will then leave hospital. And then a minority of those will end up having to go to severe and critical care, and some of those, sadly, will die. But that's a minority. It's 1% or possibly even less than 1% overall. And even in the highest risk group, this is significantly less than 20%, i.e. the great majority of people, even the very highest groups, if they catch this virus, will not die. And I've really wanted to make that point really clearly.
Do you know, for example, now how many people in the country have recovered from the virus and are now perfectly healthy again, such as the Prime Minister, for example?
Well, we have data. Obviously, you don't know everybody for the reasons Chris has said, because a large number of people have been asymptomatic or haven't gone to the doctor. But we do have recovery rates. They are available, and I see absolutely no reason why they shouldn't be made available.
Yes, we certainly have hospital recovery rates.
Yes, so we have, in a sense, what we have, and this is where I wouldn't want people to overread them. But it's important. They're perfectly open data, actually. It's perfectly possible to get hold of them if people want, is we have data on the people who got as far as hospital, how many of those left hospital. But of course, they're at the very severe end of the spectrum. All the ones I was talking about before that point, they make a full recovery. They don't enter the statistics. Now, they increasingly will enter the statistics now that we have a better testing capacity that means that we're picking up more of the milder cases in the community. But I think what, you know, if people look at those, to go back to your point, what I wouldn't want is for people then to say, oh, well, that's the mortality rate is higher than I expected. That's because the recovery rates we have are for people who are severe enough to get to hospital. And that's even so, that is a majority. So it is important that the census is read in that context.
Thanks very much, Tom.
Okay, that was it.
Yeah, so that we can end the video screen sharing now. That was on the 11th of May, 2020. Granted, a while ago.
In a secure retirement.
This thing.
But however, you'll notice that not long after that, the UK really went medieval on its own people and completely changed their tune. But initially, the UK government was pretty honest about the situation that people who are asymptomatic largely won't get sick, and if they do, they'll recover, and that would even include many of those who are older, and only a small minority would get hospitalized, and of those, only a fraction or a percentage would actually possibly die. So, and you'll notice he used the word epidemic back then, Ron, not pandemic, which is curious. They're not exactly the same thing, as we know. Nevertheless, these items I've shared today on the show today, ladies and gentlemen, are just a few of the many things of this article that I'm going to put on the RBN website today. Again, I'm announcing that for board ops, so they expect it. And I'll put the link to it also under the archive for today's show. Oh, okay, it's up now. Wonderful. So efficient at RBN. The most efficient crew, you might say, that I've ever encountered. Very good. So there it is, ladies and gentlemen. This article, granted, it does presuppose to some extent that COVID is real. I had Patrick King on the show recently where he, of course, got the Canadian government to admit it cannot produce medical evidence or laboratory or scientific evidence that they've ever isolated the SARS-CoV-2 virus that allegedly causes what is called COVID-19. Sometimes you have to concede these premises a little bit and be a little bit pluralistic about it, you might say. But nevertheless, the article that is now posted that I'm referring to, where I got these graphics, where I got that video, you can check it out for yourself, make up your own mind, look at the other material. It's a great one-stop shop. And it's a great thing to print out maybe and keep some copies on your person or in your vehicle. And whenever you're having conversations or debates with anyone, or you write a letter to the editor to the local paper, or you need ideas for protesting. And Ron and I have been very, very passionate about talking about those listening to RBN and AFP readers. We need to get active. It's not enough to be knowledgeable. When it comes to this COVID thing, we need to get out, address our school boards about masking and vaccination mandates, address the county boards of commissioners, the county judges, as they're called in Texas, across the country, state representative committees, state government committees, whatever it might be, federal when you can, if you meet with your congressman. This alternative data that the mass media cartel absolutely withholds with a strangulating effect needs to get out, and we need to be the people that get it out. It's not enough just to be concerned or to call out COVID for what it is. We've got to get active to push back the camel's nose out of the tent and so on and so forth. So that's some important COVID-related data, among many other things, Ron, that I wanted to get out. And we can refer to this one-stop shop article for future shows, too. You've got your own copy now, Ron. So anything else you might want to comment, Ron, about that?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that for those of you who don't feel up to confrontation, and I know that's the problem with a lot of people, is confrontation. But if you'd like to at least send a letter to your school board or to your city council or your county commissioners or whatever. We have letters that have been written to these people on our website at lawfulgovernment.com, and click on the COVID section, then go to the left-hand menu and scroll down there and pick out the letter you'd like, and you can alter it or do whatever, write one similar to it or whatever, and send it to them, and send it to your own representatives. And at least you've done something. That way you've contacted them and you've let them know what you feel about that.
Very good, yes. And I would suggest, if you're so inclined, follow up with a phone call, an additional letter, whatever it might be, and ask for a response. Don't simply float the bottle, the letter inside the bottle, cork the bottle, and float the bottle down the river. Ask for a response. In fact, if you're so inclined, demand a response that they not act unlawfully following the CDC's crooked lead, the WHO's crooked lead, Fauci's crooked lead, Biden's crooked lead, et cetera, ad infinitum, and simply pushing this COVIDocracy without even thinking and blinking. We don't want that. You've got to get them to think and blink. You've got to get them to reconsider vaccines and masking mandates. We don't need any more maskaholics around here. It's getting like the revenge of the mutants around here. I'm still seeing a little more masking than I would expect to see here in Michigan. I don't know what it's like around you, Ron. It has went down finally. The more armed you are with the right information, which is what we're getting across in the second half of today's show here, the better you'll be able to address people verbally or write to them or both. Or I've got signage ideas, so does Ron. If you want signage ideas to go protest the COVIDocracy, one of mine is simply media hiding vaccine death data. Put that on a sign, media hiding vaccine death data. And so that also is something you can put on a sign for protesting. But we're getting toward the end of today's show. Any parting comments, Ron?
That's it.
I guess there might not be time. Well, the parting comment is we're out of time to comment. But anyway, that's some stuff about the banksters and COVID today. We'll see you Friday here on Stop the Presses. And Ron will see you tomorrow on his show, The Search for a Lawful Government. Have a great day.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store, or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.